We're bouncing around today. We're not just going to do one topic. We're going to be rolling around, just Andy and I today. I think this is our first one that was just you and I. Usually when it's two people, it's usually my brother and I, because it's baseball and you guys want nothing to do with it, and that makes sense. But I needed you today because I am not a hockey fan. I like hockey. I would like to watch hockey, but I am nowhere near a fan. I can't get on here and talk about the Wings. I can't do it. And so I needed to bring you on because you absolutely can talk about what's going on with the Wings, and you can absolutely fill us in on where they stand coming down to the last couple of weeks of the regular season. So just for people who haven't truly followed along, this is a Wings team that's had about as up and down of a year. I mean, they're streaky as hell.
No, they're absolutely streaky. I mean, this is a team that, you know, if you would have asked me at the beginning of the season where you'd want the Red Wings to be, I'd say, well, I want them to play meaningful games in April. And right now we're starting April, and they are playing meaningful games right now with the same amount of points as the last wild card spot in Washington. And so, I mean, these games do matter, and it's phenomenal because at this time of year last year, you know, you're thinking about, all right, you know, it was a good run, and now on to next year. But it still hurts a little bit because about a month ago, end of February going into March, they went on a 7-game losing streak in March, and it was absolutely atrocious. There were quite a few of those games where they just weren't even close, and you could tell right away those games were lost, you know, either late in the first or mid-second period. And we're like, well, all right, time to move on and go somewhere else. But at that point in time, they were sitting in the first wild card spot, 8 points safe in the wild card spot, and then went on that 7-game losing streak. Now, they bounced back a little bit, which is great to see. But even since that losing streak, they're still 4-5. They're competing, which is good. And I mean, like you said, I mean, they're in that position, but it still definitely hurts a little bit knowing where they were a month ago in relation to where they are now, that, you know, they're just scratching and clawing just to keep themselves in that playoff picture.
What do you think has been the change that has led to, let's talk about before the 7-game losing streak to now, where, you know, if you count the losing streak and then you mentioned they're 4-5, that means they're 4-12 in that span. What changed in the last 16 games that was different in the 50 games before then?
I mean, I really don't want to put it on one person or one level, but I mean, I know a lot of people don't want to, you know, blame injuries. They don't want to blame illnesses. I know there has been a bug reported that's been going around in the locker room that's been tearing people up. But right there at the beginning of that stretch of that 7-game losing streak, they lost Larkin, and that was a tremendous loss. And it definitely showed not just the Red Wings, but the league, how dependent this team is on having Larkin on the ice. And I mean, that was one of those things where, like, we're trying to finally get him back and push him back and get him back into the rhythm of things. And I mean, I know I sent something to the group chat the moment I saw him drop a couple of games ago. He ended up taking a shot right off the side of the knee. No padding, no meat, no nothing. Took a shot off the knee. I was concerned it was a little more serious the way he dropped, but you could tell off a replay. It's like, all right, bruised knee, get him off the ice, you know, see how he can do. But he's a fucking competitor. I mean, he tried going back out there in the second period, and he struggled very mightily trying to stay out there. But, I mean, he's a fighter. He's their captain. You know, he knows just as much as anybody else how important he is to this squad to, you know, really keep them together. Because, I mean, you hear, you know, their coach Lalonde talk, and, you know, this was since they had picked up a few wins, but shortly after the streak, I mean, he told the media, he goes, this team is kind of mentally fragile. For sure. You know, if they give up a goal or two, like, they're out of this game, and it's very difficult for them to fight back, which was really crucial. I mean, they had a game against Tampa last night, which it felt like a playoff game because you're on the road, you're playing a top tier opponent, and it had that playoff vibe. And that's something that, you know, yeah, I'm a little excited to, you know, they've got seven games left, and it has that feel that each one of those seven games, you know, they're going to have that playoff feel. But at the time, you know, at the same time, it's, you know, that's just a little bit more anxiety, and you're not even in the playoffs yet.
Right.
But I mean, no, they've been scratching and clawing. Like I said, they got seven games left. Three of those seven are against playoff teams currently. And so, I mean, I think, you know, out of those three, they could probably steal a point or two here and there, as two of those are at home. And then, you know, the back-to-back against Montreal there at the end of the season, home and home against Montreal, I think that will, you know, really tell. We'll see what position that they're in at that point in the season when it comes down to that. But, I mean, their defense has to pick it up. You know, their goaltending's been, you know, fairly good, more particularly with Alex Lyon. The last four games, he's been very serviceable. You know, he's got a save percentage of .934 right now through the last four games, only given up 2.25 goals per game, which for the NHL level, that's great. But he needs some offensive help in a tremendous way to keep this machine running.
So let's talk a little bit about their most recent game, and we're recording this on Tuesday evening. So it was Monday night against the Tampa Bay Lightning. They're able to fight with Tampa Bay and get themselves a big win and score in the last couple of minutes, get an empty netter. Everything works out. They win 4-2. What does that win mean going forward? And then that'll roll right into my second question of project out for me for these seven games here. How does this end for you? How do you feel right now as a Red Wings fan that this is going to be wrapped up? Are they going to be playing, you know, hockey still at the end of April?
Oh, man. I mean, that win was huge. I think that was nothing but a confidence booster for this team, because it was definitely, you know, going back to the point with Lalonde being a team that is fragile and deflating when they give up goals. I mean, there was a moment there in the third period with Tampa where the game was tied 2-2, and the puck ended up skipping past Lyon, and there's Jeff Petrie there in the end in the goal crease, whipped the first time with the puck right there on the line, and it was able to recover enough to get that puck out of there. And I'm sitting there thinking, if that puck goes in and Tampa goes up 3-2, it doesn't matter how much time's left on the clock. It's the third period. This team's down. I mean, they're down by one and on the road against Tampa. At that point, the game's over. But, you know, Petrie had a second chance opportunity, got the puck out of there and kept the team alive. And, you know, that was huge. I think momentum's going to be great. You know, their next few games, I think, will really tell the story. They've got the Rangers at home on Friday. I'm not going to take too much if they end up losing there, as long as they keep it close. The Rangers right now, they've got the most points in the league right now. So it's one of those where it's like, yeah, at home, you'd like to at least compete. You know, if they keep it to a one goal game and the Rangers get an empty netter at the end, I'm not going to be upset. It'll be the games following that where they're hosting the Sabres, a team that's currently not in the postseason, hosting the Capitals, a team right now that they're fighting in the wild card. And then they've got Pittsburgh, Toronto, Montreal, where three of those four are definitely, definitely winnable games and games that they should, you know, at least get one, if not 2 points out of a piece. So right now, I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm confident in Detroit making the postseason. I'm more or less hopeful that Detroit makes the postseason. I mean, hey, they're in the picture. And I think overall, too, I mean, looking at the big picture, this is – with that win against Tampa, they've already secured at least a .500 record, and which is the first time that's happened since 2016. And I saw something as well. This is with that being said, this is the fourth straight year of improvement for this team. Now, will not making the playoffs be a disappointment? Well, sure, with the position that they were in a month ago, absolutely, it'd be a disappointment.
Right.
But they've been showing improvement. You know, this is a team that, you know, you can see they are you know, just a couple of pieces away, maybe a better goaltender with Lyon to pair up with in the offseason, I'd like to see. And a couple of pieces, you know, along those lines, and they're a playoff team.
We can only hope for the best. We'll check in again with this next week because we've got to keep talking about this. And so next week, hopefully you're available and we can really get down to the nitty-gritty getting down to the final week. But let's transition to April in the D, where we have multiple exciting things happening. And not only do we have the Red Wings wrapping up their season, thankfully the Piston season is mercifully ending soon. We don't talk about them for a reason. And then lastly, let's get into the Detroit Tigers a little bit. They're 4-0. We're recording this at, it's about 9 o'clock on Tuesday night. The Tigers have not started, if they're even going to play their fifth game of the year against the Mets just because of rain. But they're 4-0. Three of them all against the White Sox were one win or one run games. And then last night, Monday night, they beat the Mets 5-0. But it was a 10th inning. They scored 5 in the 10th. And the Mets just kicked the ball around. Jason Benetti's the new play-by-play guy for the Tigers, had a great call of the Mets infield turned into a pinball machine because they just couldn't make a play. And then Carson Kelly hits a 3-run jack that made it 5-0 and puts it out there. So I don't want to overreact to 4-0. I'm happy with 4-0. Heck, winning one-run games is important. And heck, just winning games is important. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you this team is all of a sudden a really, really good team. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm buying in on anything. I'm still cautiously optimistic that this team can get to 500 this year and that this team can be at least playing interesting games in September. I don't know how meaningful, but games where you're at least paying attention in September. So I'll get into what I can take away in four games in just a second, but I feel like you're probably with me here that four games in, we're not going to come in and crown these guys the AL Central champs with 158 games to go.
No, I think it's definitely one of those situations where, I listened to another podcast on my drive home, good old Locked On Tigers. If you guys want to listen to something specific, that's a good one I like to listen to for something that narrows down. And it's like every day, it's like, all right, we're 1-0, undefeated. Cool. 2-0, undefeated. 3-0, we're undefeated. 4-0, we're still undefeated. And it's like, you know, you get after the nitty gritty, and at the end of the day, it's like, you know, we at least have something to hang our hat on for Tigers fans. Like, hey, we're undefeated. We can, you know, bitch complain all we want. I know I'm still going to. I know you're still going to. But at this point, you know, we're one win away from winning winning back-to-back series to open up the season, which is great news, especially due to the fact that, I mean, not just under Hinch, but the Tigers in general in recent history, even before Hinch, first month was absolutely atrocious. And so to see this, it's like, all right, We can get past a little bit of that little hiccup there in the first month. Now we'll see how it goes. And obviously, Brad, you know just as well as any other baseball fan, it's one series at a time. You know, when they're sitting there in the second week of April, I don't really give a shit that they swept the White Sox to start the series or to start the season. It's one series at a time. And so I think that's really it. Now, the pitching's been great. Pitching aside from one game has been great. Right. Maeda did not so serviceable, but in relation to the other three starters, that's what you're hoping for, you know, in Skubal, Flaherty, and Olsen. So there are some good news and there are some good sights to see with the Tigers, but there are definitely some areas for improvement.
Yeah, I could really dive in. I could do an hour just on the first four games of the year. You know, I was so impressed on Monday night with Reese Olsen, where Sean Manaea was mowing down the Tigers. The Mets pitcher just destroying the Tigers. Reese Olson out there walking guys, struggling to hit the strike zone, and somehow threw six shutout innings. Really, really impressed with what Reese Olson did. Now, the Mets are a garbage offense, and that's also another thing to remember here. They've played the White Sox, who are terrible, and they've played the Mets, who will be bad again this year. Their pitching might be okay. They're not going to be as bad as the White Sox, but they're going to be pretty bad. And so it's not like they've defeated any great team or anything here. But one thing to look at here is they won on opening day 1-0. Yesterday was 0-0 through 9 innings. They scored 5 runs in the 10th. There's 2 games where they have played 18 innings and have scored 1 run in 18 innings. Yes, they scored 7 runs in game 2 against the White Sox. That's great. But they only scored 3 runs against the White Sox in game 3. This is an offense that still lacks power, still lacks consistency, lacks an ability to not strike out. There is a lot of problems with this offense. We've already seen it in 4 days. If you just think that this team gave up one more run in at any point in the game, this team isn't 4-0. They're 2-2, maybe even 1-3. It's so different that it's just one run makes such a difference. At 2-2, maybe 1-3, the offense is still a huge, huge problem.
It definitely is. You know, it's something that, you know, that this offseason, you were kind of hoping they would get just one more piece. I'm not saying they have to, you know, fill in 3 different holes, because you knew they were going to be there with the new prospects coming up, and you got to give them time. I get that. You know, there are a lot of exciting new faces that I'm ready to see take the next step. I hope that Torkelson has a rebound year. I hope that Green stays healthy and we finally get to see what he can do. And you got Parker Meadows up there. You got Colt Keith up there. We have some young studs. It's just, how are they going to be put together? But, I mean, I think, you know, through the first 4 games, I think Hinch has been doing a really good job, particularly – Not just with the pinch hitter setups, but also dealing with his bullpen. I mean, I never would have thought. I mean, yeah, like you mentioned, it's through 4 games, but the Tigers. I mean, aside from surviving and making it to extra innings, which I think shouldn't have been an issue, or shouldn't have been a thing. I think the Mets should have been able to get at least one, and that game would have been done. But their offense has been miserable, but I never would have thought that through 4 games, I would have said that pitching has been saving the Tigers so far. Pitching, saving the Tigers so far, especially their bullpen. Like, I know it's early, and I'm waiting for, you know, a couple of loose lug nuts along the way. But I mean, as far as any aspect of the game that I've been impressed by so far, it has to be the bullpen.
This is exactly when I mentioned there was one part of this team that I am going to take with the rest of the team, rest of the year. I'm going to overreact maybe to the bullpen, because I think now, with all of this health being as good as it can be, I'm saying if these guys are healthy, this Tigers bullpen is going to be a top 5 bullpen in the American League and maybe in baseball. Jason Foley, I saw on opening day throw 101 mile per hour sinkers with command. And I was like, okay, while albeit insanely impressive, let's see him do it again. And I've now seen him do it 2 more times. And so I am convinced Jason Foley has truly added velocity to his sinker, which was already good. And he is able to command it. 101 would sink. He's going to be impossible to hit. It's going to shorten games. Alex Fiedo was fantastic yesterday. Absolutely fantastic. His slider was unhittable yesterday. Shelby Miller's been great. Chafin gave up a home run to the White Sox, but he's been really, really good. Shelby Miller's really good. The only guy I'm concerned about in this bullpen is Alex Lang, who I've seen have the ability to throw quality closer-ish stuff. He just, something's gone wrong in his head where he can't hit a curve. He can't place his curveball anymore. He couldn't do it last year and he can't do it this year. It's a nasty curveball when he hits it, but he just hasn't been able to do it. I am legitimately bought in 100% on this bullpen. And part of it is also that AJ Hinch is managing it. And I think he's going to do a great job. I left out Tyler Holton, who.
Yep. You took that out. You're talking 5 Ks through two and one-third innings. Holy crap.
He faced four batters in his last outing. He struck all four of them out. The guy throws 89, 90, 92 miles an hour, and he's ridiculous from that left side. He continues to get outs. So with AJ Hinch running this bullpen, again, if it remains healthy, I think it can be something they can absolutely ride. And because I think the starting pitching will be at least solid, the run prevention side of things for the Tigers, this entire season should be top 10 in baseball. The offense is just going to hold them back, but the bullpen's great.
No, absolutely. And I mean, I don't know where you stand on this, but I mean, I think really in relation to how this team sits in the league, the only thing that's going to help them and benefit them is the fact that they are in probably arguably the shittiest division.
Absolutely.
That's the only thing that's going to help them at this point. Now, granted, yes, the new schedule isn't in their favor. This is the kind of season where I'm like, man, I kind of hope that, you know, I wish that old schedule came back.
Yeah.
Where those were the teams that you played. But I mean, we'll see how it turns out. I mean, it's going to be one of those where, I mean, I think, yeah, the division winner has got to have the lowest record out of any division winner. You're not gonna make the playoffs out of a wild card. You have to win the division or make the playoffs. But I mean, this is you mentioned it, 4 games in. I'm not buying in playoffs. It's just one of those where once you get down the home stretch, you know, I want to see the meaningful games. I don't want to see the games where, you know, we're starting August and we're bringing up prospects just to bring up prospects and give them extra time just to see what they can do. You know, I want to see these games where it's like, I know hockey's right around the corner. My work's going to pick up a little bit, but I've got baseball on my secondary laptop here in the office because it matters.
Right.
And I mean, the team's definitely built from a pitching standpoint. We'll see how the offense adjusts. You know, it is early. I do not like the numbers outside of Canna. I mean, his numbers have been what I expect from him. And obviously, you know, they're a little bloated. They're going to drop down a little bit from where he's at right now, but he's really the lone bright spot offensively. Pitch hitting's been great. I mean, you had, Andy Abanez come in with a pinch hit RBI to take the lead. And oh my gosh, I'm sorry, Brad, you're gonna have to help me out here. The home run last night,
Carson Kelly.
Thank you. So I mean, they've had some great secondary hitting, especially off the bench. And I'd say out of that, Andy Abanez, I'm excited for. I mean, I hear him talk about him on the radio, and you know, they always talk about him like it doesn't matter if he's in the game or not. He's got a bat in his hand and he's ready at all times. And he's definitely out of the young players that they have that we're expected to watch. Andy Abanez is a bit high on my list to see what he can do.
I'm with you. He's came on really strong at the end of last year, and he earned himself a spot starting a lot, but this team's going to have to get offense. Canna's going to have to keep it up. Colt Keith is a baby, but he's going to have to show some stuff. He's going to have to hit. He has to hit. And you can tell that AJ Hinch might already be a little concerned about the offense, that he started both catchers yesterday, that he started both Jake Rogers and Carson Kelly, that he's desperate to find offense already. So I'm a little bit concerned about that, but it's only 4 games in. We'll see where it goes. There's not going to be anything to really focus on to get excited about with this team until the offense starts clicking.
I think with that too, I think it's just more of let's steal a win here or there. Steal a win here or there until people pick it up.
Keep winning games. If you keep winning games, I'll end up keep being happy, because I said it all through football season when somebody would complain about the way the Lions won. And I'm like, did they win though? Did they win the games? Because that's where I'm at. You know what? If the Tigers go 162-0, averaging 2.5 runs per game on offense, I guess I probably wouldn't complain. Go ahead.
Oh, looks like tonight's game has been postponed. Rescheduled for Thursday, April 4th at 1 p.m.
Okay. So what was supposed to be an off day on Thursday is now going to be a travel day. So they'll do early. That makes sense. So I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up being a doubleheader Thursday, because I think tomorrow might get rained out too, or when you guys are listening to this today, today might get rained out too. So let's go to the Final Four, because we're not going to have a podcast until the Final Four. We probably won't have a podcast till after the national championship game. We probably won't go out. We'll probably just wait until Monday to actually get anything going. I'll be out of town this weekend anyway. So let's dive into the biggest story. And you can choose which one that is. Is the biggest story UConn's dominance, or is it NC State?
I mean, at this point, I think it's got to be NC State, 100%. I mean, with UConn, like, yeah, it's been tremendous, and I mean, they've been a team that they've shown this all year long. A lot of people were, including myself, just saying like, all right, I kind of expect them to drop after the Sweet 16 or maybe make it to the Elite Eight. That was their ceiling for me, was about the Elite Eight. And although they have been dominant, I mean, you're talking 39-point win, 17-point win, 30-point, 25-point win, only giving up 53.5 points per game for UConn. That's been tremendous. But, I mean, NC State, I mean, you're talking 9 consecutive do-or-die games through this stretch. That's just
– yeah.
It's so tough to really comprehend. I mean, I know UConn's riding with a lot of momentum, but if you take any of these four teams, I don't think anybody's momentum right now even comes close to reaching what NC State currently has.
No, and to think about, I'm going to have to say that again. 9 straight do or die games. They would not be in this tournament if they lost a single game at any point, even the championship game of the ACC tournament. They wouldn't be where they're at. And then to win every game so far in this tournament, I picked against them in the first game with Texas Tech, right? Which they played in game one. I picked Texas Tech. Then they played Oakland. Oakland took them to overtime. And you're like, oh, man. And look at what NC State's done. They got past it. And it's almost like that second weekend, they settled in, and they just started to play great, great basketball. And then this win this past weekend over Duke, that's when I truly became impressed with this team, was that win there. Because beating Oakland, beating Texas Tech, okay, whatever. Beating Marquette in the Sweet 16, that's really impressive. Marquette's damn good basketball team. You picked him for your champion, as your champion, for a reason. I'm going to blame it still on that Kolick wasn't healthy. If Kolick was healthy, we'll see where they would have ended up. But beating Duke, beating an in-conference, in-state rival, that's so awesome. And of course, the fact that we've gone this long without talking about, you know, Mitch is usually on this podcast, that we've gone this long without talking about his favorite player in the world, DJ Burns, is ludicrous, because DJ Burns' ability to play 100% essentially in the paint and still be dominant, and he's not big. He's not Zach Edey, who's playing in the paint but 7'3". The guy's 6'9". He's an average-sized college center, an undersized NBA center, but an average-sized college center at 6'9". And 270, the dude is electric to watch. He's so fun to watch.
He definitely is. You know, I got to give props to Mitch for calling that out. I mean, he called that out before the season even started.
Yes, he did.
I'm not sure if he had as much faith as I'm making this far, but tell you what, to the people listening, we hear it in the chat multiple times a game. And I mean, all credit to him. DJ Burns has been playing out of his mind, and it just makes it look easy at times. So easy. And, you know, it doesn't matter how the defense tries to attack him. You know, he can, you know, one of the more athletic big guys. And you wouldn't recognize that. You wouldn't really believe it before you watch him play. And, but he is definitely, he's definitely been playing on another level, to the point where, I mean, you see him in the basketball court, especially with his size. And we talk about that, you know, emphatically. Because even, you know, after that Duke game, he was having NFL scouts be like, hey, You wanna come over and play on the line for us? You know, he just has that freakish ability, and I mean, hey, all the props to him. I mean, they, like I mentioned, got to be carrying the biggest momentum out of any of these four squads, and he is a major, major part of that.
How much of a shot do you give him against Purdue? Because they're built the right way, honestly, to compete against Purdue, because they have three bigs that they rotate. DJ Burns, Diarra, and I'm forgetting the third guy, Danny Cannell's nephew, who they continue to show. So those three guys that they continue to rotate against Zach Edey will be big for them. It's something that I think will be, at least you can at least hang around with Zach Edey. It depends on how many fouls that they're going to give him. But this team is built the right way to compete with a team like Purdue, who Purdue has been very impressive. Purdue's just out here kicking ass and taking names in this tournament, too. If UConn wasn't doing what they're doing, Purdue would be a big-time story in this tournament, especially because they have a chance to pull a Virginia here and go from losing to a 16 seed to winning the national title in the next year. So where do you see in NC State versus Purdue? I've got a close game. I think Purdue wins it, but I think this is going to be right there at the end. A big and one from Zach Edey with 27 seconds left sends Iron Eagle into a tailspin that they're going to that Purdue is going to end up winning this game.
Well, I think, yeah, NC State definitely has a major shot, especially with the way they've been playing. And you mentioned it, having the ability to rotate the guys in that NC State's been able to do, I think it really allows your secondary guys that you're bringing in off the bench, like Diarra, to be a little bit more aggressive, especially against Edey, where it's like, hey, I don't mind if you get a couple tic-tac fouls here and there, but at least make them meaningful. Make them purposeful fouls and, be a little bit more aggressive, see what you can get away with because you have that secondary help. And, you know, looking at NC State's story, Diarra wasn't really a factor on this team until I think it was like mid to late. It was about February when they finally started utilizing him a lot more and more. NC State had a really young freshman star by the name of, Dennis Parker. Now, if you've been following just March Madness, Dennis Parker Jr. is probably not a name you're going to remember because he hasn't really played, if at all, in this tournament. He ended up getting sick there in January into February. And so they took, obviously sat for a few games, brought in Diarra. Diarra played really well. And at that point, NC State was still trying to figure things out. And they found it. Everything just clicked in that, during that stretch. And Diarra at this point, we talk about that 9-game stretch, Diarra's averaging a double-double.
Yeah.
So, as much as we're talking about DJ Burns, and that's absolutely a freakish athlete with what he's doing down there, having the backup like that, pulling a double-double off the bench, and during this stretch, it's really a dual threat. And I mean, who knows? We'll see how NC State attacks it. I mean, I think really with Purdue, you got to win or lose through Edey. We'll see how the rest of the team kind of balances out. But Purdue's done it well so far. We'll see if they can do it again.
Yeah, Ben Middlebrooks, the third guy, by the way, who's been really good to go along with the guards, who have been pretty darn good too. So now let's talk about UConn, because I think their path to the Final Four has been the easiest of the teams that have made the Final Four. But they're the number one overall seed. They deserve to have the easiest path. I'm not going to sit here and rip them for that. Also because they are destroying everybody. And when you are beating teams by the amount you should be beating them, you get credit for that. So let's let that beginning of the end of the first half to beginning of the second half against Illinois. 30-0 run. 30-0 run. That shouldn't happen in the Elite Eight. If that was UConn doing that to NC State, we'd have been like, okay, well, you know what? The Cinderella ended. It's against Illinois. It's against the Big Ten champion. And they just took Illinois straight out of their game. this is starting to feel inevitable that, you know what, it almost doesn't matter. You could combine all of the best players of Purdue, Alabama, and NC State and might not beat this UConn team.
No, absolutely. And it's really been on both sides of the ball. I mean, we talked about their dominance, but I mean, with that matchup against Alabama, I mean, Grant, I'm absolutely over the moon about both matchups that we have on Saturday. I think they're both going to be tremendous games. But I mean, with Alabama and UConn, I mean, you talk about Alabama scoring off the wall. I mean, they, putting up over 90 points a game, during this season, they're 19 and 1 when they score at least 89 points. Well, UConn, during this stretch of the tournament, has only given up 53.5 points per game. How it's trying to find that balance. Now, we talk about Alabama. They're fast. They like to shoot around. They like to – it's that quick motion offense and really, really getting out in transition to try and get the easy buckets and dish it out in transition for three. And you know, they have sharpshooters everywhere. But, you know, for UConn, I think they really got to get back out on defense. Can't let Alabama run. But if anybody is going to be able to slow them down, UConn's going to be the team that does it. So, I mean, for me, yeah, I'm putting the mark at 89 points for Alabama with that record next to their next to that number at 19-1. But man, I really, as much as Alabama's offense has been absolutely on fire and dominant, I don't know if I see UConn giving up 89 points.
No, it's going to take an Alabama defensive performance that we haven't seen from them this year to beat UConn. This is a team that's ranked in the 100s in defense. Alabama. It's the reason I picked against them in the first round, because I felt like the College of Charleston, a team that could shoot threes, would beat an Alabama team. And now look, Alabama's in the Final Four. So, teams I'm picking to lose in the first round or making the Final Four, the team that I picked to win the championship lost in the first round. I am truly somebody who you should be coming to for college basketball knowledge. But I think Alabama is going to have to put together their best defensive performance. I'm happy Nate Oates gets a week to prepare for UConn, because I think if this was a game where it was a Sweet 16 to Elite Eight, where you literally only have a day, I think UConn would win this game by 20 points. But because Nate Oates, who is a fantastic coach, does get a week to prepare, I will give them a shot. I'm still going to take UConn. I'm going to take a UConn-Purdue final. But I'm going to give them that shot to at least be right there. And I think a week ago, I would have said in a UConn-Purdue final, I'd be like, you know what? I think this is Purdue's time. They're going to get to do something special. But I think this UConn team is something specialer. And I think you're going to see your first repeat champion since Billy Donovan's Florida team in 2006 and 2007. So I'll take UConn to win by 10 points or less over Alabama. But then also, I think they beat Purdue on Monday night, 8 days from now.
Yeah, I don't think UConn's going to want to run with Alabama. I think they're really going to, you know, they know Alabama's strength. They're going to try and slow them down a bit. I mean, they love to play down low through Donovan Clingan, and he's been doing great through this tournament. So I don't think that the pace will allow Alabama to reach 89 points. And, I mean, I'm right there with you. UConn's been, I mean, the story of the tournament. I mean, yeah, you got NC State, which has been phenomenal. UConn's been the secondary story of the tournament. I think if NC State's not here, this is UConn's story to really show the world who they are. And, I mean, to have a UConn-Purdue final, I mean, that was kind of my mindset coming in. I mean, you're talking two stories where you're either going to get that first repeat champ or Purdue pulling a Virginia. And both of those stories are both of those stories are phenomenal, to the point where no matter what happens in this game, there's going to be, beautiful history made. I would love for Purdue to finally get past the hump, but the only thing that concerns me with not just, Purdue and UConn, but Purdue and NC State, I'm worried that I'm worried that the field around Zach Edey won't carry enough. That's my only concern, is the rest of the team, that they're depending on him too much. Now, if he comes up and he pulls up 35 points, sure, that's their game to lose. Absolutely. Go for it. You know, they do have the reputation for their bad history, but gosh. You know what, Mitch? I'll do it for you, buddy. I'll take NC State in the final. I'll take them beating Purdue. Zach Edey's only going to score 22 points. He's going to get flustered. He's going to miss some easy buckets and get really flustered. And Purdue's offense, I'm thinking it's going to be a really low-scoring game, and I think that's really the only way that NC State's going to win is if it's a low-scoring game. I'm talking a game in the 50s. I think it's going to be a bloodbath down low, and it's going to be really, really tough. I'll do it for you, bud. We'll go NC State UConn in the final, but that's as far as NC State's going to go. This is the Huskies tournament to lose.
Yeah, I think if it's NC State UConn will
game over.
Yeah, that won't be that game starts at what, 9:15 Monday night. You'd be able to turn it off by 10:15. I think that UConn would be able to get focused. This team is so focused, and Dan Hurley's going to be put up there with one of the better coaches in college basketball, and he's going to have the chance. If UConn wins this tournament, there's going to be an NBA opening for Dan Hurley if he wants it. I hope he doesn't, because it never seems to work out. Billy Donovan won back-to-back national titles. He's been bouncing around the NBA. Fred Hoiberg went up to the NBA after Iowa State. Now he's back at Nebraska. Now he's back at coaching in college basketball, where he belongs. I hope Dan Hurley stays. I hope that he ends up sticking around, because I think that that'll be for the best. But yeah, this is UConn's tournament to lose. Tell you right now, I'm rooting for Alabama Saturday night, and I'll be rooting for Purdue on Monday night. But if UConn wins, it's because they're the best team, and that'll work out just fine. You can find Taking On Sports on social media. Find us both on Twitter and on Facebook. And enjoy the rest of the NCAA tournament. Enjoy the Wings games. And enjoy the Detroit Tigers season once they can get back up and playing again, whenever that is, once rain finally gets done moving through the East Coast. Make sure you share our stuff around, because if you like us, well, your friends probably will too. Andy, appreciate you, my friend. I'm Brad Gressens, Taking On Sports.